What's up, guys? I'm Garrett, and this is the MMA Rundown brought to you by FanDuel. We're going to go over one topic for about 3 minutes and then move on to the next one. Today, as always, I'm joined by Season 18 Ultimate Fighter Champion, Chris Holds It Down.
What's up?
Let's go. All right, first topic we have up is the review of our fight picks from last week. So I have to say, we freaking killed it last week. So it was an epic card. It was a fight night with Jury versus Dominic Reyes in the main event. Mm-hmm. Not a huge card leading up to it, but the card came through, man. It performed. It was entertaining. It was fun to watch. And, of course, the main event brought it. So let's start out with Chris. Your pick, you got Giga winning over Swanson. That ended in a first round finish.
He landed that mean liver kick that kind of was the demise, and then just followed up with more kicks and more punches. And like I said, Giga's striking is top level, top notch, and I felt like he was going to be able to sneak in those precision strikes on Cub, and he did exactly that. That main event, though, man, that main event was one of the better fights I've seen in a while. Just the back and forth and the punishment both of those guys took, especially the punishment Reyes took.
Yeah.
Man, if he doesn't have a concussion after that fight, like, I don't know who does. He's like,
probably both do, especially Reyes.
Yeah, but just like all those shots he took before that spinning elbow was like, it was crazy to me.
Oh, yeah. And I got to give it to Reyes. You know, he was getting beat up, but like a lot of fighters do, he was curling up, covering up, and then he just come out with a jab and a left straight, like, you know, kind of get off me. He's defending himself. Yeah. He's getting put in a corner. He's either about to get put away or, hey, step up, Reyes, and fight back. And he did time and time again. He throws that left straight, and they hit. And Jury was just taking these shots. I see his head kick back, but he laid on the pressure. He wouldn't stop.
Yeah, yeah. Jury got almost finished, too. Like, remember, he got hit. I think it was like
he got wobbled a little bit.
Yeah, he got wobbled. And, you know, a veteran and tough guy like he is, he came back and, you know, and took care of business. But, man, it was both good shots from both guys. It was nonstop action. Jury never, like, really stopped striking. Unorthodox angles, all types of spinning stuff. I really liked that guy. That was the first time I actually seen him fight.
Me too.
So I was really surprised by just his unorthodox and his energy and his pace he was able to keep.
Yeah, he was great. Have to give a quick shout out to Hector Fajardo, who called the fight, not only the winner, he also picked the second round in the method of victory for Jury to get that KO win. So shout out to Hector, good call. So what do you think is next for him? A lot of people, of course, as fans, when we see a crazy knockout in the media, we're thinking, oh, title shot, he's the next lightweight contender.
Yeah.
He's the next big thing, throw him against Jan. And, oh, he could have beat Jon Jones if Jon Jones was still at the title. Like, it gets thrown around too soon. Like we just said, he was wobbled in this fight. We could just as easily be talking about how Reyes, he's back.
Exactly.
He knocked him out. He's going to fight Jan for the title. He's back. But it went the other way. So what do you want to see next for him?
Man, where's Glover Teixeira in all this?
He's fighting Jan for the title.
Okay, so there goes that. I think he's going to be up in line because there's not too many other guys in that division that are, had a performance like he just had. So whenever you have a great performance like that, you automatically get pushed up in the rankings. You automatically get pushed up into, title contention or close to it because, the fans and the UFC brass, they want to see guys that are winning, in flashy KO. He's going to sell that fight because he's entertaining and he brings it. So, like, the UFC really likes that. They know if they put him in a title fight or if they put him in a main event, he's going to deliver.
Yeah, and he's going to sell. Sell pay-per-views, or he's going to bring viewers to the fight nights. Yeah, his stock's extremely high right now. He's getting all the praise. So I know it's a business, and the promotion's thinking, how can we get the most eyeballs on it? So good for them. Last thing on this topic, the last fight pick we had was my three-fight parlay. We got Giga, Strickland, Injury, Jury, all winning. So I wanted to go Jury at the end by KO, and that would have really boosted the odds. But I think it was a +278 for that parlay, so it was a good hit for me. All right, next up we have the Diego Sanchez saga. So Chris, I don't know how much you've been keeping up with this, but for everyone listening or watching, there's been this saga the last year that his coach is kind of this oddball guy. Fabia is his manager, and he has these unorthodox training to where he makes you elude heavy bags that are swinging back and forth. And I saw a video out just yesterday. He's chasing around his fighters in the octagon with a knife and making them roll away and get away from it. He's just crazy. And it's definitely on the edge. And Dana White consistently says, he said, hey, this guy's a psychopath. They were trying to get Diego away from him. He's not a fan of him. And you know how Dana White is. A lot of people in the UFC staff are commenting, but they're a little bit nicer about it. Dana doesn't
pull any punches, man.
So what do you think about this manager? You've probably seen it in the past. He's kind of taken advantage of this spotlight with Diego Sanchez, trying to take care of him. Diego probably feels like he's getting some help, but it's really odd. And he just got pulled from the fight upcoming this weekend because they were requesting medical history from Diego for a lifetime in the UFC. The UFC had a feeling that they were going to try to sue him, etc. So what's your thought on this guy?
Man, you know, just from everything I've seen and just the way he's kind of portrayed himself on the media or on camera, you know, he seems kind of like a goofball to me. And, you know, I listened to – they had, like, this commentator meeting where they were talking about Diego. It was, like, Megan O'Leary. Yep. Who else was in there?
Paul Felder,
a couple other people, and Stefan Bonner was like recording it, and it was Fabia talking about, you know, how he's been getting disrespected on the mic, and how, like, and I understand it kind of like I can see where he's coming from, like, you know, he just wants to talk about it and have communication, but like, bro, this is not about you.
This is
about Diego.
Yeah.
You know, and I love the way the commentators brought that up. Like, why are you even bringing this up and you're filming it at that? Like, what are you trying to do? Like, what kind of spotlight are you? And to me, he seems like one of those guys that, you know, does the weird, unorthodox stuff, the training that, man, you know, I'm not going to talk bad on anybody, but I don't think it really is good to be doing that stuff, getting ready for a UFC fight. Like, yeah, you're working movement and stuff, but there's so much other stuff that you can do that's going to, you know, get you better prepared than some of the stuff I've seen him do.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure, like, I know Diego a little bit, but I don't know him as a person, so I don't know where he's at mentally. Because, like, if you're buying into what this guy is doing, like, I don't know where you're at. Like, you know,
yeah,
like,
there's something.
Yeah, yeah. So there's got to be something going on there. Yeah. And I understand, like, people do like the feeling of being helped and, like, this guy's, like, trying to, you know, help you. But at the same time, man, come on, Diego. This dude is not the guy for you. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. So obviously he's feeling someone that is like looking out for him. He's there for him.
Yeah.
And he's feeling this companionship with this guy. Obviously we have all these crazy pictures. We'll pop one up on the screen here. And so it's interesting. I get where he's coming from. The UFC is making all the right moves. They decided to pay him his purse anyways, because this was going to be his last fight in the UFC.
Wow.
Ended on good terms. I thought that was a stand-up thing to do. And it's not like it's a 20 grand. I believe it was $200,000 to him.
Wow.
As he parted ways. You know, he was the UFC, he was the Ultimate Fighter Season 1 champion,
yes,
correct?
Yeah, correct.
A lot of the history of the UFC, Diego Sanchez, his name pops up a lot. He has a lot of fights in the UFC. So they're trying to do it right. There was something, it was a weird, if you guys look back and listen to the call, it was a weird call demanding the medical records. And why would maybe do that after the fight? Did it before the fight? Did they want the fight to get cut? Too many weird things happening. The UFC is probably happy to part ways and not have to deal with any more drama, but I don't feel like it's done here. It seems like they are going to follow up and go after those medical records and something. It just smells like a lawsuit to me, so we'll see what happens.
And big respect to Diego, man. Like, the guy's been around since the Ultimate Fighter 1. And if I'm not mistaken, he's the only fighter left from that season that has been active. So guys with, you know, that many fights and have been with the company that long, I have nothing but tremendous respect for him. I've always been a Diego Sanchez fan. But, man, I don't know what kind of Kool-Aid he's mixing for you, but it's not the right flavor, brother.
You heard it from Chris. Look out for yourself, Diego. All right, next up we got John the Decision Fighter Jones. So we got some back and forth banter. Of course, John Jones, Francis Ngannou. It's the fight all the fans want to see. It's the fight that the UFC wants. No matter what Dana White says, he wants this fight. It'll be one of the biggest fights of the year, maybe right behind a Conor McGregor fight. It will sell pay-per-views. John Jones averages 700,000 buys or so, and he's getting some hate on that. But that's not a Francis Ngannou, John Jones heavyweight fight. This is going to be a whole nother ball game. It's going to be 1.5 million plus buys. They're going to stack the card, etc. Anyways, the banter going back and forth is that John Jones is talking a big game about finishing Francis, and that he's not going to be able, Francis won't be able to knock him out. And Francis comes back and verbatim says, "You're a decision fighter, John Jones, and you've barely won a fight lately, but you're going to break me out." And then, of course, John Jones responds. He says, "I carried the record for most submissions in the light heavyweight division for many years, my friend. You are what they call a one-trick pony. Every champion I ever faced punched hard. I see right through you." So I like this banter going back and forth. What do you think about John Jones talking smack, them responding? Francis said publicly he wants John Jones to be the next fight, but Derek Lewis is also in the mix. What do you think about this banter, Chris?
Man, it seems like John Jones has just been really active on Twitter lately, you know, not having any fights. I love it. You know, I love guys that, you know, can speak their mind and sell fights and create some, you know, some sort of talk outside of, you know, the actual fights themselves. But, you know, it looks like John's having fun to me. You know, he's shooting guns.
Yeah.
He's getting better in that department. And I'm like, man, I got to step my skills up. I can't let him get too much better than me, you know, because we're supposed to have a shoot-off one day, Jones.
I could see that. Chris Oldrich, John Jones, you shoot off.
But, yeah, he's looking huge. I hope he's keeping up on his conditioning because we all know, like, you putting on all that size and you're used to carrying around a lot, you know, less body weight. You're gonna get taxed a little bit faster as far as your conditioning goes. So I hope he's working on his conditioning as well as putting on all that muscle. But, you know, I think this fight is eventually going to happen. And like you were telling me before, John Jones just got rid of his longtime management after 11 years.
Yeah.
And those guys have brought him up since the beginning. So either they weren't getting him the payday he wanted, either happened. I think something happened in this sense that they were probably like on the UFC side and trying to convince John, and John probably got a little salty. Like, are you on my side? Or are you like on their side? And he's like, all right, well, I'm out.
They're probably like, this, it's $10 million. Yeah. This is what they're offering. John, this is a good deal.
Yeah,
they're making the 5% commission. Yeah. They want to close the deal, exactly, or whatever it is. Come on, John, come on. He's like, no, I want $25 million. So I completely agree. Seeing through this, it's John is going after his number. His management team isn't getting his number. They parted ways. They both had a great long Twitter rant about how they appreciate each other. And maybe that's good business. 11 years, they made a lot of money off John Jones. John Jones had a great management. And now John is shopping around for new management. And it's funny to see Ali, I know you're familiar with, manages Cody Garbrandt. He threw his name in the hat and threw it out there. He even did a video of himself saying, John, I'm open. You know my number. I'm ready to chat. And so that'd be a huge win for Ali.
Yeah, I would love to see that, man. Ali's a great manager, and he gets his guys paid. So get that new manager.
We'll see what happens. Pick up Ali. Ali, close that fight. Pay that man his money and get the biggest heavyweight fight in UFC history. All right, moving on to the next topic. We got a new UFC concussion protocol. So this is pretty interesting. The UFC Performance Institute has been doing research since 2017. They put a full study together. I believe it was over 400 pages and really took the time to invest dollars and put the foot power into this, put people to this to really figure out what's going to be the new protocol for the UFC. So it seems like they just released it. And it starts off a little bit like this: a 2 days rest if you did have a concussion during your fight, 2-stage no contact workouts, you fill out a symptom questionnaire, then you can do moderate workouts, and before you go to live sparring, you have to get a clearance by a medical professional. So it is still relying a lot on the fighters to follow this protocol, but it's a step in the right direction. What do you think about the UFC going public with this after a couple years of research?
Like you said, it's a great step in the right direction. This should have happened a long time ago. I think there's probably more concussions in, you know, combat, you know, UFC fighting than there is in football. You know, in football, you know, you're clashing and tackling a lot, but like the main objective in fighting is to knock the lights and knock the socks off somebody, like completely KO and knock them out. And we have to train for those fights. We have to get ready to get in shape for those fights. So, you know, we're taking a lot of shots, not only in fights, but in training camps year round. You know, guys are just not educated on the whole concussion subject. I know I wasn't, and I didn't know any better.
Yeah.
You know, I was sparring hard all the time. In 2 days, no contact, I think that's bull. I think if you have a concussion, it should be at least two weeks.
Yeah,
no
right,
contact. Because your brain is like probably the longest part of your body that takes to heal.
Yeah.
So I would like to see what this five-stage progression is, but two days is not enough, in my opinion. They need at least 2 weeks. I think there should be a symptom questionnaire in the first week. Of course, after those 2 weeks, get back into moderate workouts with no contact.
Yeah.
I think there shouldn't be contact for at least a month if you had a concussion. But every concussion is different. Like, you can have a concussion and you can have no symptoms.
Yeah, that's
like,
good.
And I think I had plenty of those. But then you can have concussions where you actually have post-concussion syndrome and you have symptoms after the actual concussion. And that started happening to me later on. You know, those last few, all three of those, I had post-concussion syndrome where I was actually feeling, I was feeling bad and
I didn't
feel right after the actual incident.
Yeah.
So every concussion is different. They get worse over time and they happen easier over time, especially if you don't take enough time in between the concussions to heal your brain properly.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And for the NFL, like, this is, they're trying to model their protocol after the NFL, which is a great idea. But the NFL is a little different in the way they work because they have full medical staffs for each team.
Yeah.
So right when the guy gets a concussion on the field, they pull him from the game. He's in the back with the medical staff in a medical room getting all the support he needs, falling into practice week, everything. They take him through the protocol, and it's an on-site staff, even during practices, even during games. The fighters don't have that. They go back to their home gym, hometown. Everyone's excited for him. And fighters are hard-headed. They want to get back to training.
Oh, yeah.
Especially if they came off a win and they got that concussion. Even if they came off a loss, they want to get back there. And it's what they know. It's part of their life. And if no one's guiding them or telling them. So we'll see. I'm happy the UFCPI is making waves and really pushing into the medical side and the science of it. So we'll see how this first five-step goes. But I know they're going to keep on the evolution of it. This is just the beginning. And hopefully they have people following up with these fighters and make sure they're staying on it. Because it's not like the NFL, where you're coming into practice every week and they could check in on you every day. You really, it's up to the fighters to stay on it. So, like we said, it's a step in the right direction. We'll see how it works out. I'm sure we'll get the updates. All right, and moving on to the last topic on the MMA rundown. We got Conor McGregor follows through with his $500,000 donation, but he decided to switch it up and he didn't donate it to the, what's Dustin Poirier's Fight Foundation?
Paid in Full Fight Foundation.
The Paid in Full Fight Foundation. God, it's losing my First Round Foundation. I'll think of it. But he decided not to invest the money into his foundation, and he put it into the Boys and Girls Club of Lafayette. So at the end of the day, it went to a local charity. It's another big charity in Lafayette, and they've collaborated with Dustin Poirier and his charity before. And so it's still going to benefit them. It didn't go directly to Dustin. And so it's an interesting tactic. It still helps out the area and the region, and Dustin and their team are happy about it. And it's Conor's way of saying, yeah, you tapped me in too soon. You called me out in the public too soon, and now here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to, you know, slap you in the face with this $500,000 a little bit. That's what he's thinking.
Yeah,
but Dustin's
like,
hey, I'm happy with it. What are your thoughts on that little movie pulled?
Yeah, I think it's awesome to see these fighters or anybody with the platform and money to start doing these charities for these kids that really need it, or any type of charity. So it's cool to, you know, see them doing good. And I think Conor's the type of guy. You know, he's a good dude at heart, and he keeps his word. And like you said, I think Dustin might have called him out too soon. And $500,000 to give to a charity, it takes time. It has to go through, you know, procedures and all types of stuff. So, you know, that was Conor's argument in the beginning, was like, hey, this takes time. I'm just not going to give $500,000 to your thing. So, you know, Dustin called him out, and then Conor was like, all right, well, if you're going to call me out and try to, you know, throw me under the bus, like, I'm just going to give the money to your rival charity. So I thought that was a great move by Conor. And at the end of the day, charity's got paid and, you know, they're doing good.
It's the Good Fight Foundation is Dustin Poirier's charity. And that was at the end of the day, of course, Conor said, who's the second biggest charity behind the Good Fight Foundation, or who's the rival in the area? And that was his little ploy. And Conor's team is saying, at the end of the day, charity wins. And it's in our region. Charity wins. We collaborated with this charity in the past. So it's all good things. I bet at the end of the day, Conor knows that as well. It's all going to a good cause, all going to the area. So it still helps Dustin and his cause. And the Boys and Club, Girls Club of Lafayette has to appreciate this whole thing going on because they just got a surprise.
Half Isn't a that million. A write-off, though, too, for Connor?
It's a write-off for Connor, 100%. Yeah, yeah. He has so many capital gains going on right now that 500 grand will be a slight benefit to him, for
sure. Okay, yeah. So he's smart. I was wondering, I was like, who would just give 500K? But there's probably ways to go around it for stuff.
His financial advising right now is probably telling him to donate some money because he has such high capital gains with he's going to pull in over 100 million this year. So that brings us on to our next topic, just to kind of round this one out. They did officially sell to Jose Cuervo Popper 12. I believe it's the majority of the company. This was a $600 million purchase.
Wow.
And with Conor McGregor's ownership, it's estimated he's going to get just over $100 million. So that just shows you the type of the money he's working with. And his net worth was already just over $100 million. So now Conor's become the quarter-billion-dollar man. And he has that FU money, is what they call it nowadays, right? Where he can afford to make a $500,000 donation. Or the pub where he punched that 50-year-old old man, he offered to buy it for $1.4 million. It looks like he is going to acquire that pub. And the first thing he's going to do is restrict that guy from ever coming to that bar ever again. So that's FU money.
Yeah, yeah. Classic move by Connor. And like you said, he's smart. He knows what he's doing, and he knows how to, you know, ruffle feathers and get some good PR. So he's probably looking at that pub as an investment. It's if it's in his hometown or wherever he's at, if he knows, you know, a lot of people around there, it's probably going to be an investment down the road.
Yeah, it'll probably do well for him. But it's also funny that guy's going to get banned. That is hilarious. Classic Connor. So that'll be it for the MMA Rundown. Thank you guys for watching. Please don't forget to like this video and subscribe to our channel. Thank you to all the podcast listeners as well. We'll see you next time.